Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Vertical Momentum. I am your host, Richard Kaufman, also known as The Comeback Coach. Guys, this is going to be a fun episode. This is going to be a learning episode. If you're a veteran like myself and you want to learn about being resilient in life, in business, in your health, this is going to be the episode for you. But first, I want to thank our sponsors. As you guys know, when I joined the military, I got hooked on energy drinks. But now that I'm an old man, I'm only allowed to drink one a day. And the one that I choose is a company called Bonvera. They have an energy drink that has no sugar and no crash. So definitely check them out. Mr. David Morrow, how are you doing, my brother?
I'm doing great, Richard. How are you, man?
I'm just, like I said, I'm sipping on my energy drink, having an amazing day. I get to hang out and talk with you. So life is amazing.
Right on, brother. That sounds great.
What about you? What's going on with your day?
Oh, geez. You know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I got a lot on the go. I'll be honest. That's typically how I operate. So right now, it's all business. So been grinding, sending out emails, working on sales, trying to put together a marketing plan, actually sitting down with my photographer / videographer, planning out a few things moving forward. So kind of letting the dust settle from the last few months, to be honest, and kind of getting my bearings. That's where I'm at right now.
So to give us a little bit of background from you, where did you grow up and what kind of little boy was David? We're going to go way back.
Going way back into time. Well, I mean, I'm a suburban kid. I grew up in Montreal. I still am in Montreal. And, you know, we had a pretty chill, laid back childhood. I, you know, played a bunch of sports, had great friends, awesome family. Always had this, I guess, thrill or this kind of propensity to gravitate towards G.I. Joe. And that was just one of those things that was always in the back of my mind, like, hey man, I'd love to be in the army. So we'd always play guns, me and my best bro. We would, you know, run around the neighborhood and try to shoot each other, and then eventually got water guns and Nerf guns, and you know, we got real guns. So I guess childhood was awesome. I really was lucky in that sense. And from there, just kind of morphed into what I do now. So yeah.
Now, were you an athlete? Were you good in school?
I was a jack of all trades and a master of none. I can pick up a sport relatively quickly, but that's usually where I plateau. So I played everything. I mean, you know, being Canadian, I mean, hockey was the go-to. I used to blow out my candles every year and want to be a, you know, starting defenseman for the Montreal Canadiens. That never happened. I never really got out of like the 15, 16 year old, you know, house league. So, you know, I swam, I played basketball. I basically played everything, played baseball, but, did I excel? No, not really. I was just relatively good. I just liked playing sports. And then academically I was half decent with not much effort. So I was able to get by with, you know, 80s in high school. But I was just fortunate enough to be surrounded by like the smartest people I know and still know, who are my friends. Like I'm like the dumb dumb out of all of them. They're doctors and lawyers, and I'm the infantry guy that now runs his own business. So I was basically pulled up by them. So I did okay in school, and I really appreciate learning, and that's kind of what led me into my teaching career.
Now in 1986, I actually had the privilege and honor. Yes, I'm an old fart. I actually had an honor of hanging out with some of the Canadian military. And I always thought before I met him, I thought, you know, come on, Canadians, they're always nice people, you know. But then the Canadians military that I met, especially infantry, they're pretty badass. So I got to say, I got to give you props because, after training with the Canadian military, some of those guys are and girls are really badass.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we have that kind of, I mean, I think hockey is the perfect analogy for who we are really as like a people, right? You know, it's an aggressive, fast sport. and we mean business. And then if it comes down to it, we'll drop the gloves and punch each other in the face. And then afterwards go have a beer after. Like, it's just, it's kind of how we roll here. You know, we don't seek out that hardcore confrontation, but if it comes our way, like, we'll punch you in the face kind of thing. So yeah, it's a, you know, for me, like, being in infantry was just a really good fit. I was able to do what I really enjoyed and kind of be a bit of an adrenaline junkie, but also have that kind of like warrior philosopher type thing going on as well, because I like to read and learn.
So, okay, you know, my wife's a big hockey fan. She's a big Rangers fan. And I find that the last 2 minutes of hockey is, in especially playoff hockey, is the best 2 minutes of all sports. It's all action. So I actually started to really get into hockey. And those are some of the toughest athletes that I've ever met. I mean, they'll get stitched up on the sideline. I mean, that's pretty badass, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the series this year, I mean, you know, I bleed red, white, and blue for the Montreal Canadiens. So the fact that we made it to the Stanley Cup Finals, I haven't seen that since I was, last time we were there was 1993. So I was but a young buck of, what, 12? And we won the cup that year. And since then, we've been shut out. Like, we just haven't had the teams to make it there. And we made it there by fluke this year. But we had some really hard-nosed players, like Corey Perry. He was stitched up like, he looked like Frankenstein. His face was just like half cleaved off, and he went into the room and came back, and he just had that big scar down his face. It was like iconic for the playoffs this year. Yeah. Typical, you know, Canadian dude, just, you know, getting his face stitched up, coming back out and finishing the game kind of thing. Like, yeah, that's one thing you see in hockey that you don't think you see in many other sports, is just, you know, you lose like all your front teeth and then you're back out next shift kind of thing. Yeah. you know, like, it's pretty, I take it for granted too, right? You know, I've grown up watching hockey. So, you know, punching somebody in the face in a game is, I think, it's the only sport in the world where you can actually punch people in the face and then you're not out. Like, you get back in 5 minutes later and you're back on the next shift. So yeah, it's pretty unique in that sense.
So now you've played with toy guns, and then I love hearing everybody's recruiting story. So talk to us about your recruiting story and how you joined the military and what that experience was like.
Yeah, really simple. So the unit I joined was the Canadian Grenadier Guards. So if you think to the Grenadier Guards in London that do the changing of the guard, so, you know, they have the red tunics and the bearskin hats. We're modeled after them. So we have a similar red tunic, and it looks really sharp. So my buddy, who I didn't know at the time, obviously was doing recruiting at my college. And I was just like, whoa. I was like, that guy looks sharp. You know, he's got dress blue pants on, red tunic. I was like, man, if I wore that, I'd pick up so many girls. And yeah, me and my best bud, we just walked over to the recruiting stand, had a quick chat, and we said to ourselves, like, man, we've been like playing for years. You know, why don't we just go learn how to throw grenades for real? And so, yeah, it was right there and then that we both put our names down. And for what? I can't remember what the reason was. Oh, yeah. So my buddy joined that year. And I didn't, because my paperwork just wasn't going through for whatever reason. And I just decided, well, you know what? I haven't heard anything back, so I'll go work for my uncle in insurance. And then my best bud was like, hey, like, are you signed up? Are you coming on basic with me? Like, I'm like, what do you mean? I thought this was done. I didn't think we were even joining. He's like, no. He's like, I'm leaving in like 2 weeks. What are you talking about? So yeah, it turns out I joined the year after. But he went on to a really good military and police career. And, you know, I followed on and stayed on for about 15 years with my unit, and deployed in 2010 to Afghanistan. So, yeah, I loved it from the start pretty much. And I was really happy to see that recruiting sergeant that day, because it totally changed my life for the better, for sure.
Now, you know, if you tell somebody in the United States, you know, I did 15 years and I got out, they would be like, wait a minute, are you out of your mind? You know, you're just like, because most people, they believe, you know, if you're in for 10, you might as well do the whole 20. So what was your mindset of after 15 years of, and then deciding to get out?
Oh, right. So there's a few things that were, I guess, mitigating factors. Like, first of all, as a reservist from start to finish. So we have, our system's a little bit different. I know for you guys down the States, reservists aren't quite the same as reservists here. Like, our units don't get deployed per se. Like, I was deployed with, you know, reservists that they're like, yeah, my unit got stood up and we got deployed. And I was like, okay, cool. And for us, it's all volunteer. And we were like, you know, climbing over each other to get tours in Afghanistan because we hadn't had a real combat tour in, for instance, Korea. Like, we had Bosnia. I tried to get on that. It wasn't any spots. So, yeah, that was one factor, is that I was a reservist. So I was never really full time until I decided to deploy. So, you know, all our pre-training and then deployment and post-deployment, I was a full-time soldier. But then after that, I got injured overseas. So I was forced out, essentially. I it wasn't really my decision. I was medically released. So yeah, because of that, I wasn't able to stay in, because I was considering making it a full-time go, what we call the reg force here. Potentially, you know, joining as a, or rejoining as a, as an intel officer, but that just wasn't in the cards. You know, I met my wife and, you know, eventually we settled down and, you know, we have two beautiful kids now. So it just wasn't in the cards. So, I, you know, that ship sailed, I guess, earlier on. And don't forget, I joined when I was 19 too. So, after 15 years, I still, you know, I was still in my early 30s. So, you know, I was, you know, plenty of time in another career to do other things. And, you know, our pension isn't amazing, as a reservist, but it was good enough. And it wasn't reason for me to stay any longer.
Now, when you came home from Afghanistan, because I, you know, I've interviewed hundreds of veterans now and first responders. Did you come back okay? Or did you notice something was off?
I thought it was okay. I came back and I was like, man, it didn't really affect me at all. This is awesome. But that was just, I guess, ego talking. I was single at the time. I was just turning 30. It was really a crossroads in my life. And I was just really, I guess, excited to get back after it and start my new life after tour without really addressing what I'd seen and done over there. And it turns out, yeah, what I'd seen and experienced over there did have lasting effects that only years down the road did I actually start to address them, because, you know, my life was starting to kind of stall out. Let's just put it that way. And because of that, I sought help. So, you know, like, I don't want to make it sound like I was involved in, you know, I was in knee deep in grenade pins kind of combat or anything like that. For me, it was essentially, and I'm very open about it, you know, I had the opportunity to help open schools when I was there. I was directly implicated in that kind of process. So, and being a teacher by trade, it was just a natural fit. I got to go to classes and help out, and it was great. It was a great experience. But then when the attacks started to happen against the children in the neighborhood, and then, you know, the child abuse and the sexual assaults that we were aware of, but we weren't doing anything about it, that was what kind of crushed me a little bit. So I kind of put that in a box, you know, before I left. And said, well, I guess I'll, you know, keep that there and not have to address it, and it'll probably go away. And I was very, very wrong about that. But thankfully, I had the, you know, the wherewithal, my wife as well, basically said, like, go see somebody. And that kind of led me to where I am now, to be honest. I was able to start healing, and, you know, I feel good now, and I'm able to have my own business, and I'm a lot more engaged with my kids and everybody around me. So, yeah, definitely, like, the experience over there did have a lasting effect. But, you know, the, you know, first few years when I came home, I just denied that it did have an effect.
And one thing I love about you, I loved one of the articles you wrote, I don't remember how long ago, but it was pretty recent, you know, about how you got injured during, you know, during the war, but it was the best thing that ever happened to you. Because, you know, one of my mentors, Ed Milette, always talks about how things happen for us. They don't happen to us. And everything is a teachable moment. So can you please talk about, you know, your thought process, talking about your injury and how it actually helped out the rest of your life?
Absolutely. Thanks for reading that too. That was my first blog post, actually. That was, I can give you the context behind it. I was I was in the process of leaving my teaching career, starting a new business. There's a lot of tension at home. I was literally in the airport in Schiphol in Amsterdam, because I convinced myself and my wife that I need to do this 4-day seminar, business seminar in Spain. We have a child already, a 2-year-old, and we have another one on the way. So my wife's pregnant. And so I basically traded in all my all my capital with my wife and it was just, there was something that compelled me to write. Like I remember getting off the plane, I had a layover and I had to write. I'm like, I have to write about this. There's something that is compelling me to do this. And so I sat down in the, basically like in the airport lobby, and I just started typing away. And, you know, I just felt like I had to be grateful for what had happened and make sure that for whatever reason that got, you know, widely disseminated. And if, you know, a few people read it, awesome. But that was kind of the start. That was basically the start of me being honest with myself and everybody around me, that I'll be an open book, because I want to make sure that, you know, if I'm in this situation, I'm sure there's others in the situation too. And I hope that you can get a little bit of context, but also a little bit of hope that just because you're injured or just because you're banged up or just because you're suffering doesn't mean that you won't be able to one day see the light and get better and affect other people's lives positively. And that was basically it was kind of like a watershed moment for me. I felt very emotional, to be honest, after finished writing that. And then seeing the comments come in, that was also very emotional for me too, because it was hard for me to write that. It wasn't easy, but I felt compelled, and at the end of the day it was a great decision, and it really motivated me to keep on going and write more more posts and do more blogs that are honest and relevant to my experience.
Now, one thing that I can really relate to you, even though you're a young buck, I was in the health and fitness industry now for going on 33 years. And when we got deployed, everybody else would be buying beer and, other magazines. I'm not going to say which ones, but I was the guy that had the protein powder. I had the creatine. I had all the pre-workouts, and I had all the muscle and fitness magazines. So I could definitely relate to you, and one thing I love about what you talk about is, sometimes we have to, if we need to get healthy again, we need to get healthy, the mind, the body, and the soul. So talk to us, because I know you love helping military guys and first responders increase their performance in life and in their bodies also. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the bread and butter of why I got into this business was, I mean, firstly, it was because I was injured. So, and then I realized that, wait a second, I'm able to like do what I thought I was never able to do, like, compete in sports and do some CrossFit. And even though the military basically said, like, you're broken, like you can't work, you can't, lift anything more than 20 kilos for the rest of your life. Basically just sit in your bed and shut up and take pills. And I was like, man, that can't be the way forward, can it? I was barely even 30. So just taking that idea and saying, can I spread this further? And that kind of gave me the idea, like, hey, I want to create a company that promotes the best scientific knowledge surrounding health and fitness for the military community and veteran community, just because I know that community. So therefore, why not work with it? And, I just did some market research, and there just wasn't many people in that space. So I said, okay, cool, this is what I'm going to do. And so from there, I just started taking the knowledge that I had accrued over decades, because I was always a science nerd. Like, I always had men's health, like since I was 14, 15, I had a subscription. So I would just read and read and read, and then eventually got a science degree. And so all these things kind of led to this company that I created to hopefully help, an individual, a veteran or a service member who's currently serving, figure out just some key components to making your body work better. So typically what I see, like, from the young bucks, and I know you called me a young buck, but I'm going to be 40 in 2 weeks. The younger, especially dudes, you know, they're in their 20s, they're hard chargers. They want to, you know, kick down doors and like shoot like ISIS in the face. That's a whole subsection of individuals. And they're typically, okay, I want to get stronger, fitter, and I want to be able to pass election. Cool. What are the components that you need to work on there? You know, so we look at kind of the whole picture, and typically they want to improve physically. And then we try to throw in, you know, a little bit more with respect to mindset and stuff like that, because that, you know, is going to ultimately be with the thing that's tested the most. But then we notice that, you know, when we start working with the veteran population, they're a bit older, the physical stuff is important, but it's getting over the, I guess, the stigma of most feel that they're broken, feel that they once were, you know, a lion, or, you know, those days are past. I can't do that anymore. There's a lot of negative self-talk. So, you know, having that component of, you know, making sure that your mindset is good is really, really important. Have, you know, somebody that's been through it as well to actually say, like, well, have you considered that you can unbreak yourself? You know, like, contrary to what you maybe even been told, you may not be 100%, but you could improve by 10%. Would that sound like a good, you know, a good proposition? It's usually, yeah. And then that spiritual side of things too. You know, that's why I love talking to individuals. Like, I just had John McCaskill on.
I was just going to talk about John.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, exactly.
I had some questions about John.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome dude. You know, and that's, I think that's something that, you know, especially the spiritual side of things, I think, not only being military members, especially when you're younger, that's kind of cast off to the side for most. Like, what do I need that shit for? Like, I don't need that hippie shit. Like, no, I just need to do my PT, make sure I'm good to go, you know, work on some mindset stuff and have at her. But, you know, at longevity, whether you're in the career or just in life in general, that spiritual side of things, like that Trinity, there's a reason why there's like a Holy Trinity, right? Like, it's in threes, because you have to identify with that spiritual side to get through the really shitty times. And that's why, you know, guys like John, you know, we talk about, you know, taking that mindfulness moment and just connecting with your emotions. And that's something that, especially in the, you know, let's say the infantry sphere, where it's, you know, 99% guys, it's very, you know, ego driven. There's a lot of competition, which is good, but we don't really have that kind of softer side, which is a critical component to looking at your career long-term and taking care of yourself long-term. So that's why, you know, on podcasts, I try to explore those topics a little bit more than maybe people would assume, being, you know, Army or infantry guys we'd actually look at that kind of things, because they're important. Like, they're part of who we are as humans, and you can't neglect that side of things. So I try to incorporate that as much as possible with the people that I talk to.
Now, you know, I'm a big fan of John McCaskill and Will Schneider from their podcast, which is amazing. And because of John, if you guys don't know John, he's a retired Navy SEAL commander. He wrote a book called Embrace the Suck. What a great book. But he changed my life because I had him on my show. I had Will on my show. And he challenged me. He said, you know, I want you to start thinking about your nighttime rituals and your morning rituals, because those 2 hours of the day are going to dictate the other 22 hours of your day. So what are your thoughts on nighttime rituals and morning rituals?
Oh, now we're going down the rabbit hole. I like this.
We're going deep.
Okay. So I'll reference, I'm just name dropping here, no big deal. But so another Navy SEAL, that's Doc Parsley, Kirk Parsley. I followed his stuff for years because he was on my buddy's podcast when podcasting wasn't cool. It was just for nerds. And I listened to his stuff. I'm like, wow, this guy's basically saying that everything we did training wise, operationally, when it comes to sleep, you know, like going for days on patrol, no sleep, or, you know, a few hours here and there, and then not having like a recovery plan. He's like, that incurs a lot of damage long term. And when you're young, you don't realize it, but you need to figure out what your recovery plan is going to be after something like that. And it's, he's not saying like, don't do it. It's part of the training, but to have some sort of plan. And, you know, he was, he's a medical doctor and, you know, he's a Navy SEAL, and he noticed, you know, that his SEALs were just falling apart, emotionally, physically. Couldn't really figure out why. They're moody, you know, their performance was dropping. And then he just started looking at like the one big, I guess, like flashing like light that was just not being addressed, which was maybe these guys aren't sleeping enough, or maybe they're just not capable of sleeping enough because of maybe they have, you know, traumatic brain injury, or they're suffering from some emotional stress or post-traumatic stress. Or so then he started looking at that, and then he started figuring out, oh wait, yeah, we do have like a lot of guys have broken sleep patterns. You know, they're going to bed late, they're playing video games, you know, they don't know how to down regulate before going to sleep. And, you know, reading his stuff, listening to him, and eventually having him on the podcast.
I'm religious when it comes to making sure that I have a proper down regulation time. So like I basically make my sleep as sacred as possible. So that's a habit that I
try to instill into everybody that comes, you know, through my coaching programs. Is you can train as much as you want, you can eat as well as you want, but the big elephant in the room is if you're not sleeping properly, your hormones are going to be so jacked up, you're not going to be able to benefit from all the other things that you're doing. So it's almost like creating a new religion for somebody that is, you know, used to, you know, getting a few hours here and there, not really prioritizing it and doing all the wrong things. Because for them, I mean, like sleeping, I mean, like everybody does it. It's not like you need a course in it. It's like walking, right? But when you start saying like, well, your sleep's kind of messed up, it's like, really, is it? And there's a lot of pushback I find on the sleep thing, more so than the nutrition. So like my protocol, my sleep protocol, I basically just took directly from Doc Parsley. So, you know, about 2 hours before I'm supposed to rack out, I go off easy on the electronics, get off the computer. My phone has a reminder, says, hey, you're supposed to go to bed in about an hour, hour and a half. So, blue light's blocked out, on the iPhone. You can do that. I think all phones, you can do that now. And then start turning down some lights, start maybe doing a bit of foam rolling. And then just kind of get ready for bed. Like if I start feeling that sleepiness, okay, time to go. Even if it's not really quite close to my bedtime, and I just listen to my body. And then in my bedroom, my wife and I, we make a cold, dark cave. So as cold as humanly possible. So, you know, if we can get it down to like, I'm going to do it in Celsius, 15, 16 degrees, which I think is like 67 degrees ish Fahrenheit. Try to keep it around there, and then try to keep the room extremely dark. So we have blackout shades. We have another set of blinds. And that's just to get ourselves hormonally ready for sleep. So we have pretty good sleep, and our kids sleep really well too. Their rooms are super dark. You know, their rooms are cold as well. And yeah, we ensure that, you know, sleep for them is prioritized, because we notice the difference. If they're not sleeping, they're just a disaster. But if they are, we can sleep through the night as well. So we haven't really had the issues of, you know, young parents with, you know, kids that are waking up every hour of the evening. So our sleep is prioritized, and theirs is too. So, you know, there's, you know, anybody out there that's trying to figure out like, well, why can't I lose weight? Like I would say, first things first, you got to sort out your sleep.
Okay, now I got a question, because I find that when I do, you know, even right before I go to bed, you know, I pray to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. That's my, but I soon before I go to bed at night, I try to think of, you know, three things that I'm grateful for. And I try to think of, you know, what I'm grateful that happened that day. And then when I wake up in the morning, when I open my eyes, I just give thanks and I'm grateful. Does gratitude play an important part of your life before you go to bed and when you wake up?
So before I go to bed, I don't have that gratitude practice. I have it at supper time with the family. And then I have it in the morning when I just write out my day. So I have a fancy, you know, if somebody's listened to this and they sent it to me, I want to say thank you. I have no idea who sent me this awesome journal. It's got my name on it. It's a daily planner journal. And it's got, you know, what are you grateful for? So in the morning, that's where I write it. And that just came from, you know, listening to some really successful people explain what their morning routines were like. And when I was struggling and I didn't know what was going on in my life and I didn't have a real purpose and I was, you know, trying to figure out what am I dealing with here? I was definitely suffering from depression. I went to journaling, and that gave me a lot of clarity and focus, and especially just the small amount of gratitude, whether it's, hey, I'm thankful for my like really nice espresso this morning, just to express that little bit of gratitude. Because although I'm not overly religious, the funny thing that, you know, we're talking about spirituality, I would say the last 10 years, you know, I was kind of devoid of, you know, any kind of organized religion, but, definitely had, you know, just a, you know, it was like a journey I was on, but definitely in the last few years, especially since I had kids, that whole idea of like spirituality and like the higher cause and like the different energy you put out into the universe. I don't have a fixed or like a fixed religion I identify with, but I definitely feel that calling to a higher power. And you know, that's kind of the journey that I'm on, and, you know, listening to really intelligent people and really, people that are just like have good, kind hearts, and listening to how I feel and how I can actually like manifest that in my reality. That's become really important to me, and writing those things that I'm grateful for, as frivolous as they may seem, definitely allows me to guide myself through the day a lot better than when I wasn't doing it.
So, you know, one of my, you know, like you said, Ed Mylett is a mentor of mine, and he always talks about, you know, before he goes to bed, he takes a warm shower. And when he wakes up in the morning, he takes a 1 minute cold shower just to get the body shocked and get it moving. So what is your morning routine like?
Yeah, I'm loving the cold therapy. That's again, something that, you know, when you just become more open to things and you start talking to people on podcasts, you get exposed to really interesting ideas. And that whole cold therapy concept, I was turned on to by a friend who's talking about the Wim Hof method. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but essentially there's, you know, a breathing practice, but there's also a cold therapy practice, which the research is just showing incredible benefits to cold therapy. So in the morning, especially my lead up to doing the Ironman a few weeks ago, I would definitely hit the cold therapy quite often. And especially if I was at the, you know, the spa, I do a lot of hot cold therapy. Just to, you know, stimulate the metabolism that produce a lot more mitochondria. I mean, yeah, it does wake you up. There's definitely an adrenal response for sure. But it also, like the research, it seems quite clear that if you're doing that cold therapy, you're inoculating yourself to stress. And, you know, not having a wild response to cold water is basically training yourself, just like you did in the military, to stressors. And so my morning routine now anyways, has shifted a little bit. I typically shower at night. And, so usually I have a warm shower then. If I'm training during the day, that's typically when I'll have my cold shower. So my morning routine basically looks like get up around 5:30 AM, head downstairs, have about 700 mLs of, nice crisp cold water with some lemon and a bit of salt in it. And then I go do a basic flow exercise routine. So that's basically for my back, because my back got injured. That was my main injury from Afghanistan. So I do that daily so I don't suffer from any pain. But that takes me about 15-20 minutes. And then I do just a really simple breathing exercise that takes about 10 minutes as well. So I do some breath work. And then from there, I go up and have my espresso and I start writing my morning, my journal. By then, typically my daughter's up. And so then I take care of the kids and get them ready for daycare and stuff like that. So it's relatively simple, but because it's consistent, it grounds me for the rest of the day and it allows me to like focus on what I need to do. And I notice when I don't do it, when the wheels start to fall off, that's when, you know, things get chaotic, stress goes up, my mood changes. And so that's kind of my anchor point for the day.
Okay. Now, you know, like I said, I've been in the health and fitness industry now 33 years. And this show is actually sponsored by one of the largest supplement companies in the world, Nutribio. And I love talking to trainers But a lot of times I have a lot of friends that that are trainers. And when I go over their house, and you know, I always see the stuff that they have out. But then I ask them to open up their cabinet and what they're really taking. And a lot of the stuff they don't talk about. So if I was to go into your house and open up your where you keep your supplements, what would we find?
Yeah, you would find omega-3. I take that regularly. A lot of vitamin D, either by spray or pill form. Magnesium. I have a big jar of salt. So it's a 3-to-1 potassium to sodium ratio that I have in there. And a lot of CBD oil. And that's about it. I mean, I occasionally I'll take a, especially when I was doing a lot of running, I take a collagen supplement.
Okay.
So shout out to Charlie Bales and the CB supplements down in Florida. He makes a really good product, and I think is what saved my knees from falling apart during a lead up to the Ironman. But that's about typically supplement that much, except for, you know, a few key minerals that I know I need when I'm training hard. And the omega-3s is and the vitamin D are basically my go-tos. And it's cool because I do it with my family too. Like, my kids love getting, like, I have the vitamin D spray from Onnit. So they I'm like, okay, open up. It's vitamin D time. Yep. And so the kids open up and then we give them a few sprays of that. So especially here, like in the winter, it gets very dark very fast up here in Canada. It gets very cold, so we don't get much vitamin D, and that is, you know, a known factor for, you know, respiratory illnesses and stuff like that, and all kinds of other nasty little things that can creep up if you're vitamin D deficient. So I prioritize that for sure.
Yep. And most people don't realize that a lot of times if you go into the hospital for heart issues, some of the first things they do is pump you full of 50,000 IUs of vitamin D. So there's a reason for it. And there's a reason why a lot of people, I don't care what side you're on, you know, with as far as COVID goes, a lot of people that are not vitamin D deficient, if they do get it, it doesn't affect them. So there has to be a reason why we should definitely take more vitamin D. But I didn't know I was going to go here on this topic, but we're going to, since you mentioned it, we're going to talk about it a little bit. A lot of people, you know, you see CBD everywhere. You know, and a lot of people don't realize that, you know, our bodies were meant to take in cannabinoids. So, like I said, I just want you, you know, because I talked to a lot of veterans that use CBD cannabinoid to help with depression, with PTSD, with body aches. So talk to us a little bit about your experience with CBD.
Yeah, absolutely. So The cannabinoid receptors are an interesting whole subsection of science. Like if you think about like the concept, you mentioned it, like we have these receptors in our body that are receptive to cannabinoids. That's really cool when you think about it. So, you know, where do you find them? Well, I mean, like when we create an actual product, like a CBD product, obviously we're getting in a concentrated form. And depending on what your use cases or what you're used to, like regardless of, you know, if you see it from a politicized lens, essentially we're looking at a medicine here. It has some really interesting properties. It has a very low incidence of overdose. If you're looking at just CBD itself, I find it interesting because I know in this, where you guys are at, I think it's dependent from state to state. Because here in Canada, it's federally mandated that, you know, you can, it's legal. And so every province is then responsible for its sale. But I don't think that's the same down the state. So there seems to be some different laws governing what you can buy and what you can't. But essentially here, you know, and if you're looking at just like the pure science of it, if you're just consuming, is an anti-inflammatory. It's a natural anti-inflammatory. If you were to consume just straight up CBD, you may see some benefit, but there's a lock and key mechanism that goes along with the different molecules. So the two main ones, you know, we're dealing with THC and CBD. And with CBD, you do need a touch of THC in order for that CBD to enter the cell. So when I, you know, have my CBD supplement, which I use usually before training, there is a touch of THC. Now, when I first started using it, I noticed I got buzzed. I was like, whoa, I was like, this is cool. Like, I never consumed cannabis even in high school. So therefore, my first few experiences with it, I was like, okay. But then I started realizing, okay, well, I'm in control of what this is. Like, I'm in control of my dosage. I'm in control of everything at this point. So I'm on a journey. So what works, what doesn't. So I found the ones that really worked and how much I actually needed before I would go and, you know, do anything, typically running. I found that, you know, consuming a very high percentage THC and very high percentage CBD versus THC oil would just make me feel better. I felt like I could run further. I felt like I had a little bit more gas in the tank. I felt like I was getting more oxygen, believe it or not, on every breath. So, I said, this is a really cool experience. And I posted about it on my YouTube page. That was, I think a year or two ago. So I modulate typically, I'll consume a CBD oil daily, morning, typically, sometimes in the afternoon. And I don't have any psychoactive buzz from it because I'm used to it. You know, what I've noticed, you know, like my levels of pain and anxiety are nowhere near as where they used to be. Like they're lower. And it could be due to a bunch of different factors as well. Like I just take better care of myself. But it's definitely part of the whole holistic approach. And then at night, depending on the day I'm having, you know, sometimes I'll smoke a joint with my wife, but that's on a rare occasion, usually on a Friday night kind of thing. You know, it acts as a down regulator. So I basically switched away from alcohol to cannabis, and I regulate how much THC I take in. So I don't get too high. So, you know, I'm a dad, I'm always a, you know, mom too. Like you can only go so far, when you have responsibilities, the next day. You know, so the one thing I do appreciate about it is that, you know, I don't have that hungover feeling. I can control how far I go down that rabbit hole. I just feel a lot better. So it washes away a lot of the anxiety. If I'm having a rough day, which is what I used to do with booze. Anyways, I used to smash, you know, 3, 4, 5 beers, to take the edge off, so to speak. But now I just do it with cannabis. And, you know, I try not to smoke as much as just because for me, I just don't want to consume those toxins in my lungs. So I typically go to either edibles or oils.
Okay. Now, like I said, I just put out an episode. Now I'm in recovery. I've been in recovery now 33 years, so I can't use any of that stuff. But a friend of mine, he's been sober 9 years from alcohol, and he got off of it by using CBD. So I think, you know, for me, you know, not everything is for everybody, but from what I'm hearing, it's helping a lot of people, and especially veterans. And now I have a young lady coming on next week. She's actually a psychologist and a doctor, and we're going to be talking about how ketamine actually with PTSD and stuff like that. So I like having a show where I have all different kinds of people on to learn about all different kinds of things, because you never know. Like LSD used to be considered, oh, that was just a, you know, getting high drug. But now they're finding that it's actually beneficial for people that were struggling with, you know, PTSD and stuff like that. Also ayahuasca. So there's a lot of different stuff that's out there. And I didn't know why we got on this topic, but it's great to be able to go down a rabbit hole and just talk about things that we're both passionate about. And I'm passionate about podcasting. So I love my show. I love what I do. I love talking to people, especially great people like yourself. So now you're into podcasting also?
Sure am. The Hard to Kill podcast is in season 3, believe it or not. I just published episode 65 yesterday. And it started from nothing, like most podcasts. And, you know, I've got to, you know, talk to individuals like John, you know, other Navy SEALs, you know, leaders in like the fitness space that I never dreamed of being able to talk to. And it's been a hoot. Like it was started on a whim because I figured, hey, I like to talk. I've got all kinds of time. I don't have a job right now. So why don't I start a podcast? And it's taken me to all kinds of different places and like this right here. I don't think I'd be, you know, chatting with you on a podcast were I not in the podcast space. And since I got started, it's really expanded my view of, you know, just how different people and what they're up to and what they're interested in. And, you know, I'm a curious kitten, so I like learning about new things, and I try to keep an open mind to those new things and explore them a little bit. And that's strictly because of podcasting. And it's amazing that you can talk to somebody halfway around the planet. Like I've done podcasts with, you know, individuals that are in like, you know, Latvia and, you know, Africa, like you name it, states, you know, like it's a real hoot. So, I'm really, you know, when you said you're passionate about podcasting, and, you know, I am too. I think that the biggest passions I have right now, especially for my business, and I'd like to be able to one day just focus on podcasting and blog writing and book writing. Those I'm realizing are my two kind of favorite things to do, aside from playing hockey outside in the winter and hanging out with my son and my daughter. Those are like, yeah, there's something about it. And when you're passionate about something, I realized you can't just let it go by the wayside and focus on, you know, other things that you're just not as dialed into, because it's always going to kind of pull you back in. And that's what I've noticed about podcasting, is that it's something that I always want to do, whether it's solo or with somebody else. And that's why I like going on other people's podcasts too, because obviously I like to talk. So this is a great medium. Let's just put it that way.
Now, ever since I knew you were going to come on the show, I've been binge listening to David Morrow. It's been David Morrow all the time. And you've had some great interviews with some great people, and I know what the answer is, but I want you to tell the people what the answer is. You know, you've talked to a lot of people that are operators, you know, Navy SEALs, stuff like that. I've talked to a lot of Navy SEALs, Delta Force, Green Berets. What is, and like when I talked to John, he said, I asked him, I said, you know, when I thought of a Navy SEAL before I started doing this, I would always think of that guy that's 6'5", jacked, like 3% body fat. And I told John, I said, bro, when I looked at you, you look like my accountant, you know? So I said, you know, what was it that makes you pass the selection process and, you know, having other 80%, 85% fail rate? And his answer was, I didn't quit. So through your experience talking to these special operators, what is it that makes them get through the selection process?
I think you nailed it. It's having that mindset that there's no way I'm leaving here. Either I die. And until you've made that firm decision, I don't think you get through. I mean, I never did selection, but just talking to those individuals that are at the pointy end of the stick, they all have that similar mindset. And they're all kind of laid back and kind of joke about things and can look at things, you know, from a point of view of, you know, just say, yeah, like it's easy to kind of make jokes about how hard it is once you're done. But I'm sure when they're in the middle of it, they were like, man, this is the worst thing I've ever done, but I'm here now and I'm going to get through it. And I think that's something that, you know, having never done it, but just having listened to a lot of them talk about going through that type of training, the mindset, like you have to be fit. Don't get me wrong, but if you don't have the mindset to be like, it doesn't matter what they throw at me, I'm not going to quit no matter what, like I will die or pass out before I do. I think unless you have that mindset, and it's interesting because, you know, like I have a friend too that, you know, went through that whole process, was an assaulter, you name it, now has a really successful business. And it seems like that translates over to other areas of your life because you've got that mindset. You're like, I'm going to succeed at this. Doesn't matter how, but I will. I think that's something that, you know, most people never really encounter if they haven't been pushed or haven't had a major goal that they need to accomplish. To go all in is a really scary thing to do. It's crazy scary. And I think a lot of people just hold back. I mean, I did. I wanted to be an assaulter at one point in my career early on. And I've written about it. I was too scared to fully commit because I was apprehensive of failing. So therefore, I didn't go all in. And all the signs were there. I remember, you know, I was still young. I was only a corporal. And we got to do this awesome enemy force exercise with our elite special forces unit. And literally, one of the guys was like, hey, Dave, man, like, have you ever thought about doing selection? I'm like, ah, yeah, but in reality, yes, I had. I'd been, you know, just training my ass off for months before, and I never submitted my paperwork. And even though an individual was like, hey, man, you should really consider, you know, hopping on that. You got a really good mindset. I was too young to appreciate what that actually meant. And so I try to convey that to the younger guys too, right? Like, if you have the mindset, like, I want to do this, then you have to devote everything to do it. And don't hold back. And yeah, I think that's kind of the main takeaway from those high speed individuals is once they commit to something, it is going to happen. And it's an important takeaway, I think. And I think, you know, the hard to kill philosophy kind of tries to embody that as much as possible. Like go in and go all in. And in our case, you know, with hard to kill is, you know, go all in on your health. Like, don't hold back. Get yourself as healthy as possible, because not only is it beneficial to you, but everybody around you in your community, they all benefit.
I love that. Now we're going to ask for the last 10 minutes. We're going to talk about business, because this is also in the business realm also. You know, one thing the military teaches us, we know how to write an SOP, standard operating procedures. You know, we know how to be successful. And I think that's one thing we have over the civilian sector is, you know, when you're in the military, no matter what country you're in, you work until the mission is complete, to where a lot of jobs, you're like, okay, you get into work at 9, you hang out by the water cooler till 9:30, then you clock out at 4 o'clock. And, you know, the military guy's like, wait a minute, we still got shit to do. So I think that is something that helps us in business. So what do you think translates great from military into the business world?
Yeah, it is that attitude that I'm going to get this done. And it's getting up early and staying up late. And I know that flies in the face of, oh, making sure you get to bed early. But yeah, there's a time and place. Like if you need to recover, you recover. But there are times when you need to put your, you know, the pedal to the metal. And that might mean sacrificing a little bit of sleep so that you can get that stuff done, but realizing that you can recover afterwards. That's, to me, the heart of a professional. And I think in that business realm, and I started to talk about this, you know, about a year ago, and mentioned it on another podcast, can't remember whose, but, you know, it seems like, at least here in Canada, we're in the middle of what I call a veteran renaissance, in the sense that we're creating businesses and we're getting involved in politics. We're starting to see ourselves and our voices heard a lot more because, well, it's the first time in Canadian history since the Second World War, really, that we have a large group of young veterans that, you know, typically we always have this view of a veteran as, you know, in their 80s, 90s, right? They're all old timers from the Second World War. Well, that's not the case anymore. Like, we're in our 30s. You know, that's the typical, you know, veteran here in Canada, and we're opening businesses and we're starting to form communities. And I think the reason why that is because the translation from military service to or the transition from military service to business is an easier transition than from military service to the job market or to like a regular job, because I did that. I went back into teaching and it made me miserable because I was, you know, I really liked the colleagues that I had. It was just the mindset that was there was not a mindset that I could get behind. It was very, you know, well, let's just sit around and wait for our pensions. And I can't get behind that. I find that as almost like a defeatist attitude. And when we needed to get something done, like, yeah, we worked crazy hard, like teachers, like I did it for nearly a decade on and off. And I, you know, my mother was a teacher, a bunch of my relatives are teachers. I got to give it to them. Like, work like dogs and, you know, you don't get paid very much, but you know, you do it because you're passionate about it. I get that. But ultimately at the end of the day, I find the mindset is kind of broken. the difference in entrepreneurship is that you create your own world. So, you know, if you're creating your own company, like my company, like my, the values of the company are very similar to the military values. Like the main one is honesty. You got to be honest. And at no point do I want to break that trust with anybody that comes into my work, into my realm. So like my business is based around honesty, plain and simple. And I'm not going to bullshit anybody. I'm not going to rip anybody off, because I know that, especially within our community, as soon as you're labeled as, a scammer or whatever it may be, or, you're dishonest, that's it. You're done. And I get that, because I wouldn't want that to happen to me if I was, working with another veteran run business. So I think we have that level of honesty that was kind of sorely lacking, I think, in the business world, at least. There doesn't seem to be that, I guess, that virtue of honesty, especially with bigger businesses. So I think that's where we're going to fill a gap, where we're not so driven by profits. You know, we want to be profitable, but we're more centered around the experience for those individuals that are either clients, but also the employees that we have. You know, look after your troops and promote their welfare is like one of the biggest tenets of our, of leadership. And just applying that, I have a bunch of buddies that have companies and they have employees, and, just an example of one, he's a buddy of mine. He has a really successful HVAC company. He's on growing slowly. And his teams, they keep getting bigger and bigger, and he's able to poach people from other companies. And the reason why he's able to do it is because he doesn't look at the bottom line. He looks at his personnel and he says, you know what? I got to treat them just like I did my troops. And if they're, they're having a hard time, they have other lives, like they have to be looked after, because if you want them long-term, they got to understand that, we have your back. And that's what he does. He has their back. So, if they can't finish a job on time, he tells the client, look, they're not going to finish today. They're going to come back in a day or two. And I appreciate that from what he does. And that's what I try to do, even though I don't have the same type of business. Those that do work with me, I make sure that their time is respected, but additionally that they feel like they're a part of what we're doing here. And I think that's an important aspect, especially a lot of veteran-owned businesses that I see, is that you belong to the community, that you feel like you're part of a team. And that is probably something that is going to last, and we're going to see that kind of influence a bunch of different businesses in the future.
Okay, so we have three business questions that I like to ask. First of all, if you had to start all over again, with little to no money, how would you do it in today's age of social media?
Well, yeah, good question. I did. I had no money. I basically started using the tech that I knew how to use. So the apps I knew how to use were, Facebook, Instagram, and email. And I didn't have a website. I didn't really have anything. So the beauty of starting a business in 2021, if you have a half decent idea and you write it out and you say, okay, I'm going to make this happen. Well, what is it that you can actually do with zero money? And try to get it publicized and get enough people to get on board. For me, it was a no-brainer. It was a service, which is coaching, that doesn't require me to actually make anything. So I didn't have to, pay a manufacturer or get a distribution contract with anybody. It was all on me. So that, for anybody that's deciding to get into business, if you can sell a service right off the bat, although they're typically a bit harder to sell because you really need to convince somebody that, especially when you have no clients, that you're the person that somebody should put their money and faith into. Typically it's your friends, right? When you start out, friends and family that you're begging as a client, begging to be a client. But I would say like you can start very, very easily just by using the free tools that are at everybody's disposal. And I use Facebook, but whatever it is, if it's TikTok or any one of these social media platforms, if you're using it correctly, LinkedIn, it doesn't matter. If you're using it correctly and you know it well enough, you can start making it. Then figure out whether or not you want to turn this into an actual business or just a side hustle.
Amen. Cause I'm a big, I love LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. So what is the most important lesson you've learned while in business?
Watch your numbers. I think watching your numbers. I'm not a numbers guy. So I guess to expand on that is find people that complement your weaknesses. So for me, I'm not a day-to-day guy. I do day-to-day, but I'm not the best at it. I'm better at, I left as an infantry officer. I like coming out with a plan. I like figuring out, okay, the strategy, how are we going to go ahead with this? Cool. Now moving down to the next level of the implementation and having somebody manage that, that's something that I'm not the greatest at. So finding people that can actually start helping you out with that, because when you start out, you're a one-man shop. You're marketing, you're strategy, you're customer support, you're the coach, you're literally everything. And that's basically how any kind of side hustle turns into a business. And then you realize, well, this is getting a bit too big for me to handle everything. So what can I delegate? And so figuring out who you are as a person, I think, is a huge, huge benefit to you, because if you don't know who you are fundamentally, like what your strengths are, you might make a bunch of mistakes just based on that fact alone. So, I did a lot of psychometric testing. So I did like MBTI, Myers-Briggs test. I did a big five test through Jordan Peterson's website. I did a whole bunch to figure out, like, who am I as a human being? Like, I have a feeling, but it's good to have some kind of objective, like benchmarks. And basically I found out, like, yeah, I'm a big picture guy. I'm an adventurer. I like starting new things, but when it comes down to like nitty gritty process, I'm not that guy. So if I'm in that role, I'll get super bored and I'll get distracted and I'll try to find something else. So find the people that can actually do that for me or with me is a huge benefit. So I would say, like one of the biggest things is just know yourself and then figure out how you build your business, knowing what your characteristics are like.
Okay. Last two questions now. How do we find you? How can we find your podcast? How can we get coached by you?
Great question. So the easiest way is to go to davemorrow.net, and you're going to find at davemorrow.net, you're going to find my training programs. There's a training programs tab. There's the blog tab. And then there's the podcast tab. If you go to any one of those, you're going to find all the podcast episodes, all the blog posts. You also figure out how to contact me. I've got different forms there you can fill out as well. You can set up a time to chat with me or one of my coaches that's on the team. We've got a pretty good team set up here with athletic therapists and CrossFit coaches and high performance coaches. So we're really building out a business to really be able to serve kind of all the different levels of fitness and goals that individuals are going to come to us for. So definitely head to davemorrow.net and you can find everything there.
I love it. Now, last question. I ask 1,000 people, I get 1,000 different answers. In the States, we're still under COVID restrictions. I think we're starting to lock down again. So in New Jersey, where I live, a lot of people lost their jobs. We got grandparents homeschooling kids. We got, parents driving Uber and DoorDash just to put food in the kids' mouths. So if I ask the average person to do something in 7 days, they're never going to get to it. But if I ask somebody to take an actionable step in the next 24 hours, they're more likely to do it. So if somebody's listening to this podcast and are sick and tired of being sick and tired with their health and their mindset, what is something they can do in the next 24 hours to get some help?
Well, that's a really good question. I would say that, and this kind of touches on my overarching philosophy, is like, if we want to tackle the world's problems, like, we got some big problems that are hurling at us really quickly. COVID being one of them. I don't think we're going to be able to solve them unless on an individual basis, we're good, we're healthy, we feel like we can go ahead and take on those challenges. And so I would say, in 24 hours, I think the most important thing that you could do is go and just check in with yourself. What that means is, if you can take 5 minutes to sit and just observe, you want to call it meditation, you want to call it mindfulness, and just listen to what is going on inside, that is so profoundly important. I think a lot of people don't understand the power of that. And it doesn't mean you have to sit there with your legs crossed or anything like that. It's really just sit quietly and just listen. And I think we've lost that ability to listen to what our, you know, physiology is telling us and what our, like our inner kind of engine is telling us. And I think if you can start there, because I like starting with habits that are super, super, super simple, that they're no fail habits. It's not going to do pushups. It's not going to read a book. It's not going to listen to a podcast. It's really just, can you sit for 5 minutes with no distractions and start listening to yourself? And that's how I started. I started just literally lying on the floor and just closing my eyes and breathing and look at what's happened. You know, I've got a business. So, you know, I've got two kids now. Like, it's just, it's amazing if you can just think, where do I want to go in that 5 minutes? And like, what is happening inside when I think about, is this where I really want to be? And how to manage the world around you starts to change because you've actually put that energy out into the universe. And I know it sounds like really kind of hairy fairy and like hippie shit, but like, it's true. If you can start thinking about a better future, it starts to manifest itself. So 5 minutes, take the time to chill out, relax, listen to your body, and start slowly think about, where do you want to be? And don't even know, you don't even have to have an answer to that. Just like, where do you want to be? And can you visualize it? And then you can start working towards that goal.
I love it. So guys, if you're listening to this, go to www.davemorrow.net. Check them out. Amazing website, very easy to use. Easy, even for a low tech redneck like myself, like, it's easy to navigate. I want to thank our sponsor once again, Jason Lane Curtis of Bonvera, for always giving me my energy without any of the crash or any of the sugar. Brother, I want to say thank you for hopping on, and I appreciate you, and I'm so grateful that we've become friends. And if there's anything I can ever help you with, push it out. I will. This will go out next season. So I just want to say thank you so much for hopping on today.
Right on. Thanks, Richard. I really appreciate the time you spent with me, and all the best in the future. And we'll definitely be in touch.
All right, brother. Have an amazing week.
You too, brother. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying our show, if you love what we're doing, if you would like to support us, we have a whole bunch of great stuff coming out. We have a brand new t-shirt line that's coming out. Hats, coffee mugs, any kind of swag that lets your friends know that you support Vertical Momentum and you're always looking to get better. Also, we have our new coffee brand coming out. It's called Vertical Momentum Coffee. It's ass-kicking coffee. And it will get you moving in the morning. So guys, if you're interested, go to www.richardkaufman.net. Check us out. Leave us a note. Tell us what you'd like, and we'll actually send it to you. The new website is being built. So if you guys want to, our book is out there on Amazon. It's called A Hero's Journey from Darkness to Light. Definitely check it out. It talks about my story, but it also talks about how to survive depression, how to survive addiction. All right, guys, I love you. Thank you so much for always supporting our mission, which is to save lives.